AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. I'm your host, Ashley, and today I have on Matthew Venus, the author of Ensouling the Effigy, A Witch's Guide to Inspirited Objects. Welcome, Matthew, to the show. Could you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Kind of the short version is I am an animist, kind of primarily as the center of most things I do, and beyond that, I am a folk magician, a witch, an artist. I'm also an Aborisha in the Lukumi tradition of Orisha worship, and I am a Tata Ndenge in a tradition of Kimbanda Jangola.
Wow, what a background. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Of course, yeah. So with your book, so how did this idea begin? Was this something that grew out of your own personal practice, out of the things that you're involved with? Tell me just a bit about like where this came from.
Yeah, kind of a bit of everything. Working with art and artistry and creating spirit vessels, working with effigies, dolls, puppets, statuary, doing sculptural work has been a big part of both my personal artistic practice, but also, I mean, very much tied into my magical practice because those two things for me kind of exist simultaneously. And so it's really born largely out of my own personal work, my own personal experiences and practices as someone who's kind of been working with these concepts and developing my own approaches towards it over the past 20 some odd years, if not more, really. So yeah, it's really kind of born out of a real love for this aspect of craft and practice.
For those who may have never heard these terms before, could you explain what the difference is between an effigy, a poppet, and the concept of animism?
Sure. So an effigy really is the way that I'm utilizing it in my work and in general, as it applies, an effigy is anything that's really kind of a sculptural human or humanoid form. So when we think of statuary, poppets, puppets, dolls, you know, the broad spectrum of those things, from very small in size to very large in size, anything that has kind of a humanoid form could be considered an effigy. The way that I tend to use it within my own work in my own book is anything with a humanoid form that is intended to function as a spirit vessel. So a house for a spirit to kind of inhabit, or a conduit for us to interact with the spirit through. A poppet is generally a humanoid form. It's a form of effigy. So a poppet is a form of effigy. However, poppets specifically are meant to be stand-ins or representations for an individual, a living human being that's already incarnate in a human body. I mean, you could maybe extend that into like poppets for animals or pets and things like that too, perhaps. But for the most part, a poppet is meant to be a surrogate for a living, currently embodied being, where an effigy is a broader humanoid form that can function as a spirit house or just cover the broad spectrum of humanoid forms that we might create. Animism is essentially the belief that we live in an inspirited world, and the idea that we kind of exist within in relationship to spirits all around us. So animism is incredibly vast. In some cases, some people believe it is, you know, humanity's earliest form of quote unquote religion. But animism essentially recognizes the world around us, you know, not just the plants and animals around us as having spirits, but also can extend to viewing that like the trees, the rivers, the stones around us also have a personhood, have a spirit to them. Some forms of animism extend to believing and recognizing that a spirit is indwelling in all sorts of things, including man-made things, things like objects of art or buildings or even pieces of jewelry or things like that. So animism, it's a broad term, but it's not a monolith. Different cultures, different individuals, different spiritual traditions will have different kind of slants on that. But the core of it is the belief that we live in a world where there are spirits inhabiting this world, beyond just human beings, and oftentimes beyond just biological life.
So I want to touch upon effigies and poppets. And I guess I'll start with poppets. So people who've never heard of this before, who are hearing about this for the first time, may think of like Hollywood and or think of things like quote unquote voodoo dolls. So how would you address like what that is with it, and like the terms of a poppet? Is that the same thing? I mean, I know there's like some cultural aspects of this as well. So it's a layered question, but I guess I can imagine somebody who's brand new kind of just like thinking of those two things as the same.
Right. And I mean, I think that's culturally, you know, most people's exposure to this idea of dolls and magic is through the, you know, as you said, quote unquote, voodoo dolls, which is pretty, you know, I tend not to use that term. And most people that are actively practicing these things tend not to use that term because it is a cultural specific term, but also it's kind of a misrepresentation because the use of dolls to represent individuals for the purposes of magic exists cross-culturally. It goes back to the ancient world, to Mesopotamia, to Egypt. It is not something that is unique to or specific just to voodoo. And oftentimes voodoo doll in a broader cultural sense has kind of been used to push, I would say, arguably racist tropes, right? So to step aside from that, we oftentimes use the term poppet, which generally just means doll, but it, throughout different points in its history, it could actually mean like a small child or things like that. But in the broader sense, when we use the term poppet, what we mean is a doll that is functioning as a surrogate for an embodied living person for the purposes of magic. And another conception that kind of gets skewed with that is most people's exposure to dolls and magic comes from things like horror movies in Hollywood, right? And so their minds immediately go to dolls for cursing or killing, which that certainly is a form of magic that exists and can exist with the use of dolls and poppets. However, a poppet can also be used just as much for bringing prosperity, for healing. Just as much as you could use a poppet for hexing, you can use one for healing. But for prosperity, for love drawing, for really almost any purpose you can think of, you can work a poppet in those ways. You can even use poppets as kind of an extension of self to kind of almost breathe parts of self or connect parts of self that one wishes to kind of be rid of and kind of banish those parts from ourselves by separating that a little bit from ourselves and kind of giving it its own kind of ritual or symbolic death, if you will. There's a lot of different ways that a poppet might be utilized. And I think that, you know, especially for those curious about magic or who are practicing magic, it behooves us to explore those things and kind of question those things and experiment with those things beyond just thinking that a poppet is only utilized for magic to hex or harm. Again, can be very effective for that, but it can be equally effective and incredibly helpful when we're trying to do things like heal others or ourselves.
Yeah, I love that concept that you brought up of using a poppet for yourself in positive ways. That was actually not something I'd ever considered in the past. So I may have to incorporate that into my own spiritual practice. But for those who want to make a poppet, do poppets have to be like, I don't know, quote unquote, magically activated in order to work? Like, do you need to do some sort of ritual or some sort of thing to it to get them to work or quote unquote to work?
So I would say yes. I mean, I think that it certainly is helpful to engage in ritual actions to do so. Perhaps one's, you know, imaginal powers or magical powers are, you know, strong enough that they don't need to do that. But I think that in general, the ritual actions of magic matter, right? And so when we talk about working with poppets, when we talk about essentially aligning that poppet to the individual it is meant to represent, there are different approaches that individuals might incorporate for doing that. One of the most classic ones, and this is one that's attested to, you know, from like the early modern period and medieval period even, but essentially taking a doll and baptizing it in the name of that individual, right? So this doll becomes an extension of, or is treated in the eyes of, you know, the creator or God in that case, right, as that individual. However, there are many different ways that we might approach this, baptism being kind of a popular one throughout history. However, from a contemporary witchcraft approach, we might do things like doing elemental consecrations, but I have some more complex kind of methodologies for that laid out in my book, as well as, you know, simple to complex. You know, it might be as simple as passing the poppet through the four elements for those that are inclined to work with the elements and giving it the name of this person, you know, aligning it to this person. I name you John Smith. Henceforth, the things that happen to you will happen to John Smith. And let's say you're doing this for the form of healing, you know, all healing that is given unto you will be given unto John Smith. Let you stand here in his absence, that he may be healed, that he may be brought to, you know, greatest form, that he may be restored to vitality and vigor. You know, let your arms be those of John Smith, let your hands be those of John Smith, let your head be that of John Smith, et cetera, right? So there are a variety of different ritual purposes, or different practices rather, that we could employ for doing this. Usually it will incorporate some ritual action to fully identify this thing as an extension of or a stand-in for the individual by naming it for the individual. And for me, there's also this kind of transposition that happens where, as I kind of gave an example there, you know, may your hands be that of this person, may your head be that of this person. So we're aligning all of the body parts, right? So that we're really awakening it in this way. And further, there's oftentimes a transference of breath, oftentimes giving it the breath of life. When you look at many of the world's mythologies in the creation of human beings and the way that it's kind of those stories are told, we can see this as far back as, you know, ancient Egyptian, and we see it in Greek stories of Prometheus giving life to human beings. And in the Egyptian case, it's Ptah or Num. The breath of life is oftentimes given by another deity or spirit. We also see this even in, you know, Genesis and the Bible. So the breath of life is oftentimes also an element incorporated into these ritual practices, whereby we're either inspiriting or ensouling an effigy, or we're awakening a poppet and essentially giving them the breath of life so that they may live as an extension of the individual we're working our magic for or on.
So since poppets are supposed to represent a particular person versus an effigy working or being ensouled with a spirit, for example, which mm-hmm. may have some sort of relationship with them, a poppet's more like a standalone figure. In that case, would you say that it is important if that you were the person who is activating the poppet, or could you activate the poppet and give it to somebody else and it still be effective?
I think that you could activate it and give it to someone else and it could still be effective. I think that, you know, it depends on who you're giving it to and for what purpose. I think that, like, I would probably be not terribly inclined to create a poppet that represents another person and give it to then a third party. Do you know what I mean? Or at the very least, I would want them to be present for the ritual action part of it. Personally, I think that it's likely to be a bit more effective for that purpose. Now, in a different case, I might create a poppet to represent an individual and then give it to that individual, you know, for them to perhaps work on, or maybe after I'm done doing work, you know, healing work or something on it. Usually though, poppets in those cases, you know, if I were to work a poppet for healing for someone, it's usually activated for the specific purpose of healing that individual and then afterwards dismantled ritually, and the connection is severed between it and the individual because the work is done.
So part of the reason I asked this is actually because I was given a poppet from somebody in my tradition's upline the very first time that I met her. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a poppet of Donald Trump. And she specifically told me to put the poppet on the ground by my front door and that every time I walk in and out of my residence to give it a good old stomp. So I was just wondering, because I never magically activated the poppet. I just took it and, you know, did what I did with it. But I just wasn't sure about it. I mean, I'm sure she probably magically activated it, but I never personally did anything with it. So sure. That was more of a personal question.
I mean, I think there's also something to image, utilizing image and imagery in magic. And I think it can be helpful if something is ritually tied to that. Sometimes it's the thought that counts. However, I think that if we truly want to amplify focus our magic, it's always helpful to have a ritual component. So whether they did it or you did it, you know, I think that it's fine and effective. The reason I said that I think it would be nice to have the person there if I were going to give them a poppet is because then they were there as a part of the whole process and a witness to the process of that effigy becoming something, you know, not just clay or cloth or whatever, and fully transforming into an extension of the individual, right? But I love the, you know, stomping on a Trump poppet. We live for that, you know. That's some traditional witchcraft that goes back to all the way, you know, we know that the people were making effigies and cursing political leaders as far back as the ancient world. I mean, it's part of the reason that King James became so obsessed with witches, as it was said that there were witches making poppets of him.
Oh, love that for him.
Yeah, that's why he wrote his book Demonology in part. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, if anybody's interested in making a Donald Trump puppet, the way that mine looks that was gifted to me was, it was just some yarn, and it was red, white, and blue for the body. And then the hair was, you know, a nice bright orange. So if anybody is looking for some inspiration with some string in their house, there you go.
And if you can't make your own, Trump puppet, store-bought is fine.
Store-bought's fine if you can't summon it directly.
Plenty to be found on Etsy and other places or whatever.
Oh gosh, Etsy, the Etsy witches.
Right.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back in a moment. All right, and welcome back. Oh gosh. Okay, so with effigies, I want to talk a little bit about that. So effigies are vessels for spirits, as we mentioned. How would somebody establish, I don't know, like consent or boundaries with the spirits that they put inside of these?
Well, I think that that's as individual as any other relationship that we have. So consent and boundaries are going to be the same way I don't want to say exactly the same way. A part of that is through the process of what I would generally consider like contracting and pacting spirits, but that does require that one kind of develops certain abilities for interacting with spirits, sensing spirits, communicating with spirits. And there are different ways that we can do this. The book that I've written on this subject, it's a long book. It's intentional because the first like third of the book focuses on spirit work and developing kind of an understanding of how the spirit world functions, ways that we can effectively engage with spirits in a common sense way, ways that we can interact with, contract with, and pact with spirits so that we are establishing clear, solid boundaries, right? And so that we are ideally not ending up in situations where we might be unnecessarily exposing ourselves to, unnecessary or unfortunate consequences, but also functioning in a way where we are acting respectfully towards the spirits of the other world, right? One of the things that I majorly address in the book is a lot of the cultural fear and misunderstandings that we have of spirits. I find sometimes in the broader magical world that a lot of times people fall in almost like two far extreme camps. And one is a total fear of spirits, that spirits aren't to be trusted, that there's trickster spirits, that, spirits are out to get you, they're out to get the upper hand on you. And the other is that, anything a spirit says, we need to listen to it, we need to do it. If a spirit asks for something, we need to give it that. If a spirit tells us some information, it must be true. And those are really far ends of the spectrum, right? Spirits are all knowing, all good, whatever, or spirits are something we can't trust and we need to be afraid of. That's incredibly... it's kind of ridiculous to believe either of those extremes because, the best way I can say it is spirits are people too. And are all people trustworthy and good people? And just because your neighbor asks you to give them $1,000, does that mean that you should, even if they've given you good advice in the past? On the other extreme of that, are all people bad and scary? And do they all want to get one up on you? And they all want to cause harm to you and, trick you? So the realm of spirits is vast and varied. And yes, there will be spirits out there that are wanting to take advantage of you. Yes, there will be spirits out there that are incredibly benevolent and will be incredibly trustworthy. But there's a broad spectrum that exists within in between all of that, right? So a big part of that is developing our spirit communication abilities, our discernment, and also establishing like reasonable protections. I don't think that the spirit world is any more dangerous or than our own realm, especially if we walk into it open-eyed and well-prepared. But so that's a big part of what my book actually addresses, is trying to put forth and give tools and recommendations and establish ways that we can effectively, mindfully, respectfully engage with spirits in the spirit world in a way which is ideally mutually beneficial for us and the spirits that we work with. Because spirits are not just vending machines, there should be some level of like respect and reciprocity and relationship built there. So I hope that answers the question. I don't know. But I think that that's a big part of it. It's not something that you necessarily just do overnight. I don't recommend that, I would say that placing a spirit into a spirit vessel that's going to like live in your house or whatever, after just first encountering a spirit is almost equivalent to asking someone who you just met and had a nice coffee date with to move in with you. So, you know, boundaries, negotiation, discussion, conversations, discernment, those are all things that play a role in developing relationships with spirits, the same way that they play a role in the way that we develop relationships with inspirited, you know, human beings, right? You know, embodied human beings. So if you're bad at setting boundaries, if you're bad at communication, if you're bad at negotiation, if you're bad at keeping promises, if you overtrust or undertrust or all of these other things, those will also play a role in the way that you develop your relationships with spirits. And so a part of all of this work that I think is incredibly effective in making us more effective witches, but also just more exalted, fulfilled, self-aware human beings, is that we must first truly know ourselves and what our strengths and pitfalls are. And I think that developing proper boundaries and communication and negotiation, consent, all of those things with our spirit work can also help inform our everyday interactions with people.
Now, for people who do seem to successfully install an effigy with some sort of spirit, whether that be like, I don't know, a nature spirit that they work with or something, or even a deity. How can people kind of like confirm that this has actually happened? Like, I don't want to say like testing their effigy, but, and I guess this is also very dependent on the spirit that is inside of it as well. But are there things that people can do to kind of like, I don't know, confirm that it has accurately happened?
Well, I do think that you should test spirits. Otherwise, I don't think there's any reason to kind of, like, if a spirit claims that it can do something or it will do something, we should be able to verify that. Otherwise, we're just kind of playing make-believe. So I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, it's just the same way that if a plumber tells me he can fix my toilet, okay, like prove to me you can fix my toilet. And then next time I need plumbing done, then maybe I'll call upon you and we can develop a relationship too. I will also say sometimes spirit relationships are very that, like contractual, right? I give you something, I give you an offering, we work together. You know, it's not every spirit I work with isn't necessarily someone that I consider like a friend. I consider it more a contractual thing that we're doing. There are other spirits that I am very close with and that's almost like they're family to me. So, you know, there can be just the same way that we have interactions with humans in this way. Right. There's that. But I do think that like that is one of the ways is give it a task, you know, that falls within the purview of the things that it has told you that it can do. And ideally, again, you've already established communication with the spirit before you decide to put it into some kind of a spirit vessel. Again, I think that there's a broad spectrum of the types of spirits that we might give bodies to, and also just a broad spectrum in the form of bodies that we might give to spirits. In my book, I don't speak just about effigies or humanoid forms. I also talk about crafting fetish objects, spirit vessels like pots and bottles and all these other things. And so there's a broad spectrum of things that can be employed here. But I would also say, you know, working with like a plant spirit is a very different experience than trying to work with an angelic or celestial spirit or demonic spirit or whatever. There's a broad spectrum of different types of spirits of varying complexity and different, you know, their own personalities and nuances, right? So there's that. But the other thing I would also say is another way that we can kind of work with, confirm things is by utilizing divination. So, you know, some form of divination. And there's a whole section in the book where I talk about basically simplistic forms of divination that we can utilize in our spirit work to communicate with spirits, also to do things like verify that something has worked or that something, you know, that everything is all set for the types of effigies or spirit vessels that we're crafting. And so, you know, the methods that I give in the book, there's like three different options. One in incorporates a deck of playing cards. Another is using three coins and another is using three dice. But they're all relatively simple tools, but you can get some pretty complex conversations going when interacting with spirits. So I would say divination, but also, you know, if you're able to engage with spirits through direct communication and through other methods like spirit flight, you know, what I usually refer to as transvection, but other people might understand as like astral travel or, you know, shamanic journeying or what have you, is another way we can interact with spirits or doing things like scrying or, you know, those types of things. But I do think, yeah, test your spirits. You absolutely should.
I'm a big fan of scrying, so I do like that suggestion. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit more about your book. I know you laid out a bit about what people may find, but could you tell the listeners a little bit more about like what is contained in the book?
Yeah. So the reason that I was really led to write it is because I feel like throughout world magical traditions, there is a long kind of pedigree of the application of working with and use of inspirited objects. So when we talk about this, is really any type of physical material object that has been intentionally worked with, activated, oftentimes, created, and crafted, that functions as a material earthly body for spirit beings. And this exists in many, many traditions throughout the world. And it's something that I feel like it really doesn't get a lot of attention, or definitely not the attention that it deserves and needs in contemporary witchcraft. So that's really what it's exploring. What you would find in the book, it's divided into four sections. So the first section predominantly focuses on kind of giving an exploration of the witch and the witch figure, and at least how I approach witchcraft and what that is and what that means to me. But then we go right into an exploration of spirits and spirit work and ways that we can approach working with spirits, contracting with spirits, communicating with spirits, all of these things. Then the second part of the book focuses more on exploring some of the history of poppets, effigies, spirit houses, giving examples of that, but also then dives into some of the practical actual like crafting, what goes into these things, what are different forms they may take. So talking about, working with clay or wax or cloth, or how we can collect various stones, dirt, herbs, all of these things, and ways that we can go around partnering with the spirit of those things in our process from an animist perspective. And so then by the time we get to the third section of the book, that becomes really the real kind of, I would say, meat and potatoes of the book, where we do get into discussing ritual approaches towards ensouling, towards inspiriting, and the ways that one could approach, ritually giving life to these objects in these ways, or really kind of awakening them. And then the final part of the book is a formulary that gives a collection of incense, oil, recipes, as well as washes and other types of things, as well as then a selection of magical workings that the reader can work with to give them also kind of an idea of what this work kind of can look like for them.
I'm really impressed with the amount of effort and everything that you've put into this book. I do have a copy of it, and the table of contents alone, I could tell that this is really such a passion and expertise of yours. And I was very impressed by everything I saw that was listed here. So
well, thank you.
Yeah, no, of course. And even talking with you too, I'm just like, wow, like I can tell you really, you really know what you're talking about. It's very impressive.
It's funny because this is, the first like official full book that I've written. I mean, I've been teaching on this subject for well over a decade. But this is, my first book. And part of the, I've had people, I teach classes on witchcraft and folk magic and on herbalism and all these different things. And people have been saying for many years, why haven't you written a book? And I just kind of didn't want to do, at least for my first book, didn't want to do just another witchcraft, like intro to witchcraft book, And the reason that I put this out there is because it is something I love. It is a major part of my practice. But it's also something that I felt like is lacking in the broad conversation of contemporary witchcraft. So I wanted to contribute something that hopefully would get more of that conversation going and more people thinking about this as an approach towards their craft and incorporating elements of it in their craft. So that's like because I am passionate about it. And I'm excited about it. And the funny thing is this book, when I was contracted for it, was only meant to be like 60,000 words, but it ended up being like a good 100,000 words. So it took longer to finally get out there than they had originally planned. But it seems, the publisher is very happy with it. I'm very happy with it. It's a big book. It's like 440 pages. But also even in the back, there's like multiple appendices just to kind of help people, because I really wanted it to be something that provided a lot of information and approaches for individuals. So I think it's got a little something for brand new readers that are entirely new to this and to practice, but also it's intended to also be something that can really be effective for intermediate to advanced practitioners.
Well, it's very impressive, and it's very clear that you were very passionate about this. And I think this is honestly such a cool topic. I don't know why, but when we first got connected and I heard about your book, it reminded me of when one of my students was in outer court training, she told my high priest and I that she was about to buy a quote unquote haunted doll off of Etsy. And we both were like, oh my God, one, do not buy that. Two, we can just teach you how to do this.
Haunt your own dolls.
Yeah. Haunt your own dolls. Don't give an Etsy witch money for something it's probably not legit anyway.
Yeah.
And then there was like a whole conversation about like there was ethical things about that. Cause it's like, if the doll is haunted and then it's like being sold and shipped, like there was a whole conversation about it.
It is interesting. Like, because you know, there is throughout different parts of the world and, you know, a part of even what I do too, is I will create inspirited objects or fetish objects and things like that, that are intended to have specific purposes. And I will sell them to people. But that's a part of the arrangement of the agreement with that spirit in, you know what I mean? In the whole process before it's even, done in that way.
The consent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The communication and consent around it. Right. But yeah, I do think that there is a mindfulness and a relationality and respect that we should have for the spirits that we're trying to work with, you know, and partner with.
Oh, 100%. And I'm so glad that you wrote this book, because this was years ago. She asked us to teach her and we said we would. And honestly, we just never got around to it. And now she is a second degree and I could just be like, you know what? You take this book and
amazing.
Yeah. Just get the book and you can teach yourself.
Wonderful.
Yes. So where can the listeners find a copy of your book to purchase or pre-order, and where can they find you on the internet?
Excellent. You can find the book most places that books are sold. If you're not seeing it at your local, you know, witchcraft or occult shop, ask them to get it. But otherwise, you can find it, you know, on Barnes and Noble online. You can get it directly through the publisher, which is Cross Crow. You can get it from me on my website, which my website is Spiritus Arcanum. It's SPIRITUSARCANUM.com. I make incenses, oils, all sorts of things there, but also we have a broad selection of everything that you need, candles, stones, herbs, everything that you might need for your practice, and a large selection of books, including my own. If you order through Spiritus Arcanum, the book that you receive will be signed by me. And so that's kind of nice. But otherwise, you can get it from the publisher, which is Cross Crow Books. It is distributed by Wiser, so Red Wheel Wiser. You can order it through them. But I've seen it on Barnes & Noble. It's certainly on Amazon. So most places you can find that. And yeah, you can find me at spiritusarcanum.com. I am on Instagram, as well as spiritus_arcanum. Those are the main places that you can find me, and see kind of what we're up to. I do lots of, classes and workshops, both in person and online. And you know, I'm out there doing things. So you can usually find me one place or another.
Awesome. Well, I will put all of that in the episode description for this. And if anyone's interested in finding me, you can find me on Facebook at Seeking Witchcraft Podcast, or on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft. Or if you want to support the show, you could do so on patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft. Matthew, before I let you go, one, I want to say this was a fantastic conversation. I really loved hearing about your passion and all the education and information you gave about this. And I'm so stoked for your book. I am especially stoked to give it to my students so she can learn how to do it herself. But
I hope she loves it. Yeah.
I'm sure she will. I was super impressed with what I saw. But I always ask people at the very end of the show, one piece of advice they can give to a beginner. Doesn't have to be about anything we talked about today, but if you could give one piece of advice, what would that be?
To a beginner, my advice to a beginner would be to be curious, to try different things, but to actually do things, to experiment with things, you know, and recognize that a big part of figuring out what does and doesn't work for us is by trying, right? If we don't take any risks in our practice or in our lives, we are seldom likely to get any type of reward, right? Magic challenges us to sometimes put ourselves into uncomfortable or strange or new situations, but it's only through working through those things that we truly find out who we are, what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, and that we can allow magic to transform us in ways that are truly magical. So be curious and get out there and actually do magic.
Fantastic advice. I love that. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. Like I said, all of the information to access you and your book will be in the episode bio. And thank you everybody for listening. I hope you all enjoyed. Bye.
Bye-bye.